We're probably going to cover a lot of territory in number of verses tonight. We'd like to cover chapters 3 and 4 tonight of Daniel. These first six chapters are, a lot of them are historical events. Now we had a big prophecy given in the second chapter about the four kingdoms, that great image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. Now in this third and fourth and fifth chapters, they're going to be primarily historical, and sixth chapter. Then when we get back to over to the seventh chapter, we're going to go back to this prophecy again and have more to do with it. Now, in these two chapters, there's 67 or so verses, so it's a lot of territory to cover. We'll read a lot of it. But there are a couple of real strong lessons taught here, which are certainly beneficial for us if we can just get the lessons that are taught. Now, the third chapter, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Now, this, of course, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon, and he made this image of gold, and his height was would be 90 feet, 60 cubits, and the width was 6 cubits, which would be 9 feet. A cubit's 18 inches, I believe. And so this was probably just some giant pedestal that was round with these dimensions and just went to this height of 90 feet. And it more than likely was not solid gold. It was probably something that was covered with gold, because some of the people have figured up how much gold it would be for this thing to be solid gold, and it would be an unheard of amount of gold, thousands and thousands of ounces of gold, more gold than even was in existence probably. And there are those who think that they might have even uncovered this this statue or some part of this statue. Some man named Opert, who excavated the ruins of Babylon in 1854, found a pedestal of colossal statue that may have been the remains of Nebuchadnezzar's golden image. And so this thing is not just a myth. It actually did exist, and the story about it is an interesting one. So he set this image up in the plain of Dura. We don't know exactly where that was. It was in the province of Babylon. And some have even surmised as to where it might have been in the city of Babylon in relation to the king's palace. But we don't know exactly where this was that it was set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Now, he really thought a lot of this image. It had a very important place to him in the scheme of things. And so he had all of these rulers and governors and princes and sheriffs and all that are named here. And we could go into the word and try to figure out what they all mean, but they all mean some kind of official in the government, in the various provinces scattered about. So there were people here maybe from practically all over the world that had been brought in to the dedication of this great statue. Now, this kingdom was a very vast one. It was the most powerful one in the world. It was the most powerful one up to that time, and probably of all time, and it was very highly organized. They had all kinds of officials and different ranks and positions and functions, and so we have that demonstrated as he called these different people in. Then the princes, the governors, and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together under the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages." Now see, there were probably all kinds of languages here. All kinds of peoples and nations represented here. All under the rule of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire. "That at what time you hear the sound of the coronet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music." Now these different kinds of instruments that are named here, they've tried to figure out what they are, and there's a meaning for each one of these, but it's not to much advantage to try to identify them. They're just different musical instruments. So he says that when you hear all kinds of this music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So the command is you fall down and you worship this image. Whenever you hear the sound, when you hear all these sounds of music, you worship the image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. So they thought quite highly of this image, even to the point that every person was commanded to fall down before it and to worship it. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the coronet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. So he decreed that it should be done, and it was done. Whenever the sound came out, they all fell down and worshiped it. Now, of course, as we are allowed to sit back in a highly removed position and to observe this thing without any feeling one way or another, it looks rather foolish to us that man would just allow himself to be forced to fall down and worship an image. But had we been there, had we been stirred by the sounds of this music, by the great decree that the king had commanded, by the presence of all of these people from all over the world, the high officials and dignities, that it was the most important event of the time, we no doubt would have had a great temptation to have done what everybody else did, because it was the thing to do. It was just the thing to do. And we can see people today, behaving in very, very similar means. You can go to, for example, many schools, maybe colleges or wherever, where they're having, say, a pep rally. And the people will, you'd think they were worshiping something by the very actions and by the very noises. But a person who's caught into that crowd has a hard time not joining in because it's the thing to do. These people didn't know any better. And it was just seemed to be the thing to do. Everybody did it. Don't even ask any questions about it. Don't challenge it. Do it. But it was a worship. He told them to fall down on your face and worship this image. And so they did it. Man today is tricked into various kinds of worship, not realizing, not questioning whether or not it's right or wrong. He just does it because it's the thing to do. And were he left out by himself, of his own intellect, he'd probably never do that thing. But it's a kind of a herd or a crowd reaction. "Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews." Now when this thing happened and everybody worshipped this image, well then some of the Chaldeans, these were the people who probably lived locally, and they were maybe in an advisory capacity or something, but they came and accused the Jews. Now the Jews, of course, would be the people that were brought over there captive from Judea. "They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever." Now, that's their approach to the king. "We want you to always be great. You live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image, and whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now they were just spilling the beans, in other words. They were making an accusation. There are certain men, king, that are not doing what you said to be done. They haven't regarded you. You know, this sounds just like what would commonly be called as a stew pigeon today. These men were really telling something. They had made a great discovery. Here's somebody who's not doing it. And so they came and promptly told the king. Now, the lesson that's taught here is, of course, a very great principle. And that principle is, whenever the command of man, which in this particular case happens to be a law of the land, a decree passed by the king, whenever a command of the land conflicts with God's desires and God's wishes for his people, then what do God's people do? Do they bow down to the command given by the law of the land, or do they then have to take other action and obey God rather than men? That's the great principle that's laid down here. It's Old Testament, of course, but still it's just as valid for us today, because it's important that we see what these people were doing. Now, in the Old Testament, from the time of the first king there, Saul, and even into the inhabiting of the land of Canaan, God's people were not only his people, but they were also a temporal, physical nation. And so God dealt with them as his nation, as his people. They fought wars, they won. They disobeyed God, they fought wars, and they lost. And it seems from the reading of the Old Testament, when they were obedient to God and they fought a battle, they didn't lose any men. Nobody got killed. But when they were disobedient, then they could have people killed. Now, people today want to take that principle that relates to God's nation of Israel, a holy nation, and apply it to the kingdoms that exist today, as though this nation here might be a holy nation or any other nation. But that principle doesn't apply today, because when you step outside of God's holy nation of Israel into the kingdom of men, then you have a different set of principles that apply. And so these Israelites who had been taken, or these Judeans who had been taken down to Babylon as captives, they were no longer in the kingdom of Judea. They were in a foreign kingdom. But we find that they nevertheless were obedient to it. They respected it. They respected the laws. They were so harmonious. They were so agreeable and cooperative, until they were even put in charge of certain parts of it. Well, now we today are in a very similar position. Sure, our citizenship is in heaven. That's where we really have our citizenship. But we necessarily, by living on this earth, we have to be a citizen of another kingdom. We have to live in another kingdom. A worldly, earthly kingdom like Babylon was. And so we have the same respect for the laws, for the authority, for the sovereignty, if you want to call it that, of this nation or whatever nation we might live in. But if there should come a conflict between the laws of the land and the laws of God, then the principle here also applies as to what these men did. There was a golden image built by the king, and commanded that every subject should bow down on his face and worship it. Well, as you can see, this would be quite a conflict with what God wanted his people to do. God never wanted his people to worship any graven image, like unto anything on heaven, anything on earth. This God did not want. So now the king knows that these men had disobeyed his decree. So in verse 13, then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you did not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I set up? He put the question to him real plain. There's no dispute about what he wanted. I want you to worship my gods and this golden image. And is it true that you didn't do this? Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? So he just told them very bluntly what was going to happen. If you decide to do this, it's going to be fine. But if you refuse to do it, then the punishment's going to be this. You're going to be cast into this fiery furnace, and nobody's going to deliver you. No God's going to deliver you out of that. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Now I think what this means is that we're not going to take any elaborate pains to explain our position. We're going to be plain with you. We're going to be to the point. And it's not going to take some lawyer to come along and write it out in fine print for you to understand what we're doing. I'm not going to be careful to explain this to you. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So that is rather plain language. If this is the way it's going to have to be, then our God that we serve, he'll deliver us. But if not, if there's any other way, we still are not going to worship this king, this idol, your gods, or your image. Even if God doesn't deliver us, we will not worship him. So both sides now knew exactly where they stood. The king had made the decree. He wouldn't back down. These men had made their stand. They wouldn't back down. Now a lot of people would say, well, how much simpler would it have been? How much trouble would it have saved if these men had just gone through the motion? They could have known in their own heart that that golden image wasn't anything. They knew it wasn't a god. They would have known that they weren't really worshiping this thing. All they had done just gone through the motion, just kind of gone along with the group. Surely that wouldn't violate any law, just to bow down on your face. You could do that any time. No questions asked. Nobody would even challenge them. Nobody would even ask them if they were really worshiping this idol. Just go through the motion. But it would have violated the principle here. And how true it is today, whenever we go through the motions that other people go through with, like observing some of these feast days like Christmas, and we say, well, we know it's nothing. It's nothing to us. But nobody else knows it, see. The principle is, if you're going to take a stand, you've got to take a stand. And so that's what these people did. They said, we will not do it. We'll not do it. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Here was the man who had been their close friend. He set him up into a position of authority. Now he changed. No longer did he regard them in that respect, because they had violated his desire. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. It was supposed to be 7 times hotter than it ordinarily would be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Now I understand this word most mighty men means the people of high rank in his army. Then those men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats. In other words, their full clothing was on. And other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So the men who bound them and cast them in there, the furnace was so hot that it killed them. It slew them in the process of throwing these three men into the furnace. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound in the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Now, they put them in there bound, and now they were loose. The fire had burned nothing except their bonds. We'll see later that not even the clothing was destroyed. But not only does he see three men that are loose walking, he sees four men. And the fourth, he says, like to the Son of God. And this phrase here, Son of God, doesn't refer to Christ or the Messiah, but it simply refers to the fact that this fourth was an angel. And the wording that wouldn't apply to Christ. So there was an angel in this fire with them. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. He realized now and recognized that they really did have a God that they served, and he addressed them in that sense, servants of the Most High God. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of the fire had passed on them. While none of their clothes were destroyed, hair of their head wasn't even singed, they didn't even smell like fire. It was just very much of a miracle. And all of these high-ranking officials now witnessed this. They saw this. Now, can you imagine what a tremendous change of face or about face that Nebuchadnezzar had to make? He had this golden image set up there. He commanded all people to worship it. These three men had refused. And right demonstrated before everybody, they had won out. It didn't make this golden image look a bit better, I'm sure. Nor any more enticing to realize that these men served a God much more powerful than the golden image. And if it be true that that pedestal that was found in 1858 was actually the pedestal of this great image, or if that not be true, these people didn't have enough insight nor foresight to realize that that thing they were worshiping would one day be ground to powder, be absolutely nothing, be only a curiosity piece with no power whatsoever. But this same God that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego served, and that angel that was in the fire with them are still very much alive and powerful and ever reigning today. So there should be no question, you know, as to who we're going to choose, who we're going to serve, God or men. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not worship, they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. So Nebuchadnezzar completely gave in. He said, You've changed the king's word. I bless you now for the fact that you serve your God and you wouldn't serve nor worship any other god except their own God. And of course, this is the crux of the whole chapter. This is the lesson here that we need to be taught, that we don't serve anything else. And of course, many times we can be made to appear to serve something, and when really, we can be made to serve something when really we don't realize we're serving it. But nothing comes before the service of our God. Now this is the second time that we have demonstrated then that Nebuchadnezzar has recognized the true God as being above his gods or above the power that his gods could bring upon the servants round about him. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So he ended up promoting them to a higher position than they were before. And he decreed before all of these languages and peoples and nations that nobody could speak against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now here's God's way of demonstrating his power among his people, even though they're in a foreign nation under captivity. And he certainly does it, or did it, in a very spectacular manner, and it's been recorded over the centuries, and for us to read and learn. Now we'd like to move on into the fourth chapter. The fourth chapter now is another entirely different event. And this chapter begins with Nebuchadnezzar speaking. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. This is a decree made by the king. And Daniel, it seems, has recorded this decree word for word in the original language of the Chaldeans and is inserting it here in his book. And now the events in this book do not necessarily follow a certain sequence of time, because this is not the same time nor is it anywhere related to the golden image. So in writing this decree, this is what Nebuchadnezzar said. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God had wrought toward me. How great are his signs! How mighty are his wonders! His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. So now the king is writing in his own words his account of what happened as a decree to all the people, and we have a recording of it here in the book of Daniel. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Now Nebuchadnezzar had been across this road before, you know. He had a dream in that second chapter, and he brought in all the wise men, and nobody could tell him what it was. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at the last, now this is exactly what happened before, at the last, we don't know whether he was fixing to put everybody to death this time like he did before, but it was the very last when he'd exhausted every other resource, it seems, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and you know that was a heathen name given to Daniel, Belteshazzar was,